This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the spring of 1953, the Atomic Energy Commission detonated 11 atomic explosions at its Nevada test site. The fallout spread over Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. 1 year later, Stuart Udall was elected to represent Arizona in Congress. He gave our atomic weapons program his full support. But later, after serving as Secretary of the Interior under Kennedy and Johnson, he became more cynical about what he calls our Cold War affair with the atom. In 1979, Udall left Washington to represent the victims of radiation in the Southwest in their suits against the American government. Udall has written a memoir called The Myths of August. Udall is the grandson of a Mormon pioneer missionary. Stuart Udall's father served on the Arizona Supreme Court. Udall's brother, Morris, was elected to fill Stuart's seat in Congress when Stuart joined the Kennedy administration. I asked Stuart Udall if there were atomic secrets that were kept from him during his early days in Congress.
The truth of the matter is that members of Congress in that period were kept in the dark. This was done deliberately. And we went along with this, the idea that it was safer politically not to know all these secrets. This put power in the hands of technical people, of scientists, of these little secret governments that we had organized, like the Atomic Energy Commission, the CIA, and so on. And they in effect, were substituted for the normal government process, which would involve full participation by Congress. Congress really was emasculated in a very serious way in terms of its participation in democracy.
Well, a lot of the atomic information was classified information that you didn't have access to. How did you feel about that at the time?
We accepted it as a necessary evil. It was just the way things were when I came to Congress. That's the way it was, and there wasn't much you could do about it. If you became intrusive, they would say, hey, why is he trying to find out the secrets? Maybe he's not a person who's completely loyal. This was the McCarthy era, and Mr. Nixon was part of that, I'm sorry to say, put a chill on members of Congress.
And do you think a lot of the information that was classified, atomic information, while you were in Congress, should have been accessible to you?
Much of it should have been. I've come to believe, looking back on my life and my career in the federal government, that we exaggerated the communist threat. We were almost hysterical at times. And that this, in effect, chilled our democratic processes and largely eliminated the kind of congressional oversight and concern which were normal for this country.
You left Washington in 1979 to represent radiation victims in the Southwest. Why did you decide to leave Washington and change your life like that?
Well, it was a personal decision. I really wasn't comfortable doing Washington-type lobbying, to be honest about it. And my brother and I had been personal injury lawyers in Tucson, and I decided it was time to go home. Senator Goldwater and I are agreed that you can go home and that it puts a whole new outlook on your life.
You started representing the family members of Navajo men who had become uranium miners and either developed lung cancer or died as a result of exposure to radiation. How did you take on that work?
Well, you see, I had been a congressman, and I had represented Navajo Indians. I had a lot of Mormon relatives in southern Utah, and they had to ask me to look into this and to find out whether something could be done. They felt there was too much cancer, and it intrigued me, to be frank with you. I realize now I probably did something dumb in the sense that I thought you could sue the government and succeed. I thought that the government would respond to the horrors that it had created, but I found I was wrong.
As you worked on these cases, more and more formally classified documents were released. Did you work directly to have documents released?
No, the usual procedure is to use Freedom of Information Act. We didn't have to do this because when you file a lawsuit, you then can force the government to produce some documents, although you never know whether they've produced all that they should produce. But what helped us was that Senator Kennedy and Senator Hatch from Utah teamed up and they held hearings, and their investigators went in and pulled out a lot of documents. But my guess is that the great bulk of the documents are still secret.
What are some of the documents that were declassified that surprised you most?
Well, with the uranium miners, it was both documents and testimony that showed that the old Atomic Energy Commission knew at the very beginning of uranium mining in 1948 that unless they ventilated the mines, the exposure to radiation of the miners would be astronomical. They knew it, and they did nothing. And that's the most hideous example of the kind of deceit that the government practiced.
Now, you also started representing downwinders, people who lived downwind from the bomb tests and were exposed to radiation. How did you take on their cases?
Well, we had to, of course, as lawyers do, we had to talk to them and become acquainted with what they thought had happened and what they were told and not told. And I call it the big lie because they told these people there was no danger. And they said, well, we don't like what's happening. We're suspicious. And they said, there's no danger. And there was no way. They had no information. Their members of Congress had no information. So it just went ahead. But we were able to get a lot of documents. I still think some of the most damaging documents probably are still classified secret, about the tests and the size of the tests. And a lot that we learned was pretty shocking. You know, they in 1953, they exploded atomic weapons in Nevada that were three times Hiroshima. Now, this was out in a desert, supposedly, and the people who lived downwind were 30 and 40 and 50 and 100 miles away, but they did it.
Now, did you know about this when you were in Congress?
No. I was just like my clients, these people. We had no Congress. There was no oversight. There was no supervision. And what you knew, you got it in the newspapers. And that was, they were doing this testing in Nevada, and they knew what they were doing, and it was safe.
My guest is Stuart Udall. He's written a new memoir called The Myths of August. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stuart Udall. You lost your lawsuits. What were the grounds that you lost?
Well, we lost all the lawsuits on one essentially Neanderthal legal ground, and that is the king can do no wrong, the old English common law rule. The government is immune. And although Congress had tried to strip away part of that immunity, during the Cold War, federal judges and certainly the U.S. Department of Justice took a very hard line that everything that was done was immune, and that the government, no matter how horrible it had behaved, or no matter how much deceit it had used, that you couldn't sue them. And that was the ultimate decision.
When you found out that you'd lost the lawsuit representing Native Americans who mined radiation, you were supposed to go to a meeting to explain this to the people who you represented, but you didn't even go. You did not want to go.
Well, I've explained this. I was devastated because these people had believed me when I said go along with the lawsuits, help us cooperate, and the government will respond. The government, once it sees that it has committed a hideous wrong that has taken the lives of people and devastated families, that the government would respond. And when all the courts slammed the doors in my face, I really was humiliated. What could I do after I'd said to them, believe in the law, believe in American justice? I couldn't go because I was humiliated. I had no explanation that I could give them that they would understand.
In 1990, Congress passed the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, which you helped draft. Was it your idea to turn to Congress to do what you thought the courts weren't going to do?
Well, the idea and the initiative actually came from a congressman from Utah and a senator from Utah. And I was so discouraged, and I just made the big effort and lost. And in the beginning, I said, well, it's futile. And as a matter of fact, the U.S. Department of Justice opposed even this little piece of legislation. They fought it tooth and nail, and we were able to get it passed. But I considered this kind of a little miracle that we got it done. But it is there. It is providing something for these people. It's rather modest, but it's better than nothing.
What is your reaction to the radiation experiments that were recently declassified by Secretary of Energy Hazel O'Leary?
Well, Hazel O'Leary is my heroine. I think she stands out in the crowd in the Clinton cabinet. And this has been a very exhilarating thing for me to see this. I'm still not sure. I don't see, other than a little rhetoric, that the Clinton administration is going to open up the files that should be opened up of the Pentagon and the National Security Council and the CIA. The Cold War mentality, the Cold War culture, is very powerful here today in Washington.
Your new book, The Myths of August, is about the effects of atom bomb blasts and the Cold War. But another big issue that was, I think, very life-changing for you was the Vietnam War. You served in the administrations of Kennedy and LBJ. Were you expected, as you were having more and more doubts about the war, were you expected to not express them in order to be supportive of your president?
Well, you have to recognize that in those times, I'm talking about the 1960s, and this is true up to today, presidents really had this little national security apparatus, cabinet, and they saw the secret reports and the reports of the CIA, and the rest of us did not. We didn't even have clearance, and therefore, all you could do is presume that they made the right decisions and be supportive.
Your son, Scott, was in the military, but he deserted the army and then sought refuge in Canada during the war. Was that a turning point for you?
It was a terrible experience. And this was just after I left the government. And he went in the army and deserted. And he went to Canada. And I went up to see him that first winter. And yes, it had a deep effect on me.
Even though you were opposing the war, I guess, by the time your son deserted, did that still go against your values in any way, the idea of deserting your military?
Well, my son made that decision, and parents, if they're wise, support their children, and that's what we did.
What is he doing now?
He's struggling with his life, and he's a brave young man.
Is he living in Canada or the U.S.?
No, he came back.
Mm-hmm. I'd like you to compare for us what you think Washington and Washington politics are like now, compared to how they were in the 50s and 60s. When you were serving in government?
Well, there's been an enormous change, and the change has been produced by two things, three things, jet planes, television, and money. You can't believe 40 years ago how wonderfully simple congressional life was, and I raised all of my money, it was a modest amount, in in my home district. There were none of these PACs. And we came to Washington. We had a big family. We came and stayed. I didn't go home. I wasn't expected to go home. But this whole thing is an incredible rat race here now compared with the wonderful, quiet, really peaceful existence of a congressman 40 years ago.
Would you want to serve today if you were younger?
No, I don't think so. If I did, it would be with what I know now, it would be with the desire that maybe I could be there for a few years and help change the system. That would be my motive.
Stuart Udall, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Stuart Udall's new memoir is The Myths of August. This is Fresh Air.